Under? I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is May 9th, 2025. The time is 3:32 p.m. Please silence your cell phones. Committee members present today, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Myers, Senator Klayman, and myself, Senator Giesel. I do expect Senator Dunbar along later. Senator Wilikowski and Senator Hughes are both excused today. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather, who's taking our minutes today, and Doug, who's helping us out with the audio. The only item on today's agenda is Senate Bill 180, LNG Import Facilities. And we have today testimony, presentation from the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. So briefly, this is the third time the bill has been heard. No amendments have been submitted. I will ask my staff to give a brief refresh on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Intamayo Harbison, staff to Senator Giesel. SB 180 is a simple one-line bill that would repeal a section of Alaska statute that currently exempts the import of natural gas from regulation by the RCA. And that is the totality of the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, we'll go directly to our invited testimony today, and that invited testimony is Dr. Steve Colt. He's with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. Joining him to back him up and also answer questions related to his presentation is Dr. Gwen Holdman, also with ACEP. Online as well is John Espindola, Regulatory Commission of Alaska Chair, and Steve DeVries, also a commissioner on the RCA. So, Mr. Colt, welcome. We have your PowerPoint on the screen, and so we welcome you to introduce yourself and give us your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, very clearly. Thank you.
All right. For the record, my name is Steve Colt. I'm with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, and I'm going to offer a few ideas and maybe ideas and facts about this bill before you today. I will be looking at my own version of the slides, so hopefully I'll stay in sync with you. I'm going to now move to slide 2. So I thought, really, the best that I can do as an economist, not a regulatory law wizard. Is try to put myself in the position of a very well-informed consumer. I am a consumer of NSTAR gas, so this does matter to me, but I set myself the task of trying to understand how this bill fits into the larger ecosystem of our transition from Cook Inlet gas to potentially significant reliance on LNG. And I had quite an exciting odyssey looking into what's below the surface of this very simple one-line bill. The bill repeals an exemption to Chapter 5 of Title 42. So already it's a double negative situation. Going back to Chapter 5 of Title 42, Chapter 5 is the Alaska Public Utilities Regulatory Act. It provides what I would call sweeping powers to the commission unless otherwise circumscribed. And one of the ways that those powers are circumscribed is by the list of exemptions in 4205.711, which is part of this act and this chapter. And so, having established to myself that the what we're dealing with here is an exemption to an otherwise very broad mandate, I then turn to what are the other exemptions in 4205.711, So I'm going to try to be good about, since I can't see you, asking for a direction to move to the next slide unless there are questions. Madam Chair?
That's great, Steve. Yes, if you could hold for a minute, let me check and see. That would be great to stop at the end of each slide. Are there any questions for Dr. Colt at this time? No, no questions on slide two, Dr. Colt. You may continue.
Okay, and by the way, there's about 11 of these slides. So that's either just to help you know what's coming down the track. So as one might intuit from noting that this bill repeals section 711 or subsection 711V, there are about 23 predecessor exemptions in 4205711, which seem to have developed or added themselves onto this statute over the years. And it's kind of fun, I thought, to sort of look at the what's in here. And I just did a kind of an irreverent condensation of the actual statute. It's easy enough to look at, but there's all kinds of interesting exemptions here, and I won't walk you through them, but hopefully you're able to eyeball some of the stuff here. And since it takes two slides to get through the list, I need to go to the next slide to get through the list, but I will once again pause and ask if there are any stop for potential questions.
Right, so we're on slide 3 and 4. And just for clarification, Dr. Colt, this list, A through V, as in Victor, are all the exceptions or exemptions from RCA regulation. True?
True. However, it's important to know that these exemptions come in many flavors, and one of the flavors is whether it's a partial or a total exemption. So one of the ones, I'll just pick not a random, but a single example. One of the ones that I'm quite familiar with, and I think a lot of us are, is the potential exemption from economic regulation that a cooperative can achieve through an election. That's item H, exemption H. So it has really it has a step and a caveat. The step is they have to do an election, and the caveat is that they only get out from rate regulation. And I have some fine print in there that says they still don't get out from 221 through 281 of the act itself. So these exemptions are not a blanket by any means, although some of them are pretty close to being that way. They're of all type, size, and color.
Very good. I don't see any questions. We can move to slide 5.
Actually, I was just going to move to slide 4 and pause really, really quickly to make it crystal clear that when you get down to V, we're now at the most recent exemption, and that's the exemption that is the subject of this bill, and the bill simply repeals this subsection. And I guess we will either get into it a little bit or a lot or maybe not at all, but part of the complexity that underlies what is a very simple bill or a very short bill is that the exemption refers to the facility being exempt from the chapter, as opposed to, say, the sale of gas from the facility. And so those distinctions, for better or for worse, loom somewhat large in this this whole discussion. And I am now ready to move to slide 5 if you are.
Yes, we are ready for slide 5.
Okay, so we have a sort of a mantra at ASEP when we, or at least this year we do, when we are asked to think about legislation, and that is, What problem are we trying to solve with the potential legislation? And this came up a little bit on Monday. I listened in on your hearing on Monday about this bill. And so then I posed the question to myself, well, can't we just live with it? And other people answered that question on Monday. It's in the record. My interpretation of those answers is sort of summarized here in part, and then I go on a bit. But I heard RCA to say that, well, I guess not only did I hear RCA to say it, but I went and looked at their lengthy order in the docket that where this came up, which they summarized their order in the hearing on Monday. But they addressed this question at some considered length in this docket, U25004. They asked several parties for briefings. They got some very thoughtful briefings on this topic. And they concluded in the order, and I think they reiterated it on Monday past, that they do retain jurisdiction, or they currently have jurisdiction over gas sales from imported gas. Not to mention, in the order, if there turn out to be any stranded costs incurred by NSTAR and the project never gets built, they will be able to weigh in on whether ratepayers like me would get stuck with those stranded costs of an unbuilt project. And just to bring this slide to a close, the RCA wrote in its order that they found an analogy persuasive from NSTAR, that analogy being to gas purchased from gas producers in Cook Inlet with gas wells. And the commission, of course, the RCA is, of course, does not regulate the gas wells, but it certainly does regulate the contracts for the gas produced by those wells. And so this slide sort of summarizes what I heard to be the state of play, and what my research into this docket confirmed is the state of play. And I would just like to know one more thing on this slide, which is that since preparing the slides, I actually looked in more detail at Chugach's brief in this matter, and they concurred very strongly that the RCA, to their way of thinking, the RCA does have jurisdiction at the moment over any request to recover costs by NSTAR that are associated with it getting gas from an LNG terminal. And so I don't want to imply that there's sort of unanimity on this on this question. And Chugach has a very articulate brief in this docket, and they are pretty adamant that there's a good division of the field between FERC and RCA. So I'll leave it at that, but I feel like if I had read the Chugach brief more carefully, I might have put some of that right into the body of the slide. Any questions before we go to six?
Well, not really a question, Dr. Colt, but I would point out that also in that case five, Jail Properties obviously was, in order number five, Jail Properties was asserting that in fact the RCA did not have jurisdiction over gas sales contracts in Cook Inlet. And therein is the confusion created by subsection V as in Victor.
Um, Madam Chair, I absolutely concur with what you just said, and I did read that brief, and I hope nobody is construes anything I say to be taking sides or taking a position here.
No,
and I concur that they made a persuasive case that there is maybe at best confusion reigning.
Yes. All right, Dr. Colt, we can go on to slide 6.
So, again, what I heard the RCA say on Monday was that they can live with the exemption, especially if they're able to apply this analogy that gas from the terminal could essentially be treated by like gas from a well. However, I also heard them to say that repeal, as this bill lays out, would clarify the RCA's jurisdiction. And the RCA, of course, is here, so if they want to correct me, maybe they will have a chance sooner or later to do that. So that is what we might call the state of play. And what we then did, and I am now implicating my colleague, Dr. Holdman, here, because we bounced these ideas off each other, is we tried to think about, are there some situations that are maybe less analogous to this situation that's treated in docket U2504, which relates to NSTAR participating in a import terminal largely to be constructed by Glenfarne. Are there other scenarios that we might want to look down the road and think about? And we were able to identify two. And I suspect that you all could probably identify more because you're all very sharp people and you're very good at identifying potential pitfalls and consequences of your actions. But at any rate, we came up with two, and after we go through those, that will be the end of my slide. So are we ready to go on to the first scenario, which would be slide 7?
Yes, it looks like we're ready for slide 7.
All right, slide 7. We tried to think about, well, first of all, what if the exemption is not repealed? What if we just do nothing and we go with everybody's other than JNL Properties, but go with NSTAR's assertion, Chugach's assertion, and maybe the RCA itself that, yeah, we're okay. And the reason that I, as a ratepayer, would feel comfortable with that is, again, as a ratepayer, not a lawyer, I sort of get this sense that, yeah, well, they can do what they want with the facility, but when the time comes to sell gas, I know from experience with the Rail Belt Utilities that the commission will be there to safeguard my interest via its approval of any sales contracts or sales arrangements. And they will protect me from having to pay too much for the gas, regardless of where it comes from. So this scenario was cooked up by me trying to think about, well, wait a second, what if it's not Glenfarne that builds the facility, but what if it's NSTAR itself, or perhaps a Chugach or a consortium of rail belt utilities or others who are already in the utility business? Is there a problem if they were simply to supply the gas to themselves without any kind of an arm's length contract? And there might be a problem if we just leave this exemption in place, thinks me, and I think I can say that Gwen did not disagree, that this might be a problem. In other words, if we leave the exemption in place, it might insulate an entity from RCA scrutiny if the entity is sort of one and the same, the operator of the terminal and the user of the gas. So we identified this as a risk. There's so many double negatives here, I hope I don't get confused, but scenario A is intended to show a potential risk of not passing the bill, a potential way in which the exemption could cloud the issue and maybe harm the ratepayer. So maybe that made sense, and I will now definitely stop for questions.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Cole, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding off of this this scenario that you've got here on slide 7 that even though the RCA wouldn't be able to examine the contracts at that in this case, they would still have the authority to regulate the rates as paid by the consumer, though. Is that correct?
Well, you might – that question might be better posed to the RCA. I hate to speak for them, but my short answer would be yes. However, the more things that happen before – the more things that sort of that end up classified as a fait accompli, I think the harder it becomes for the RCA to undo it when they finally get to the point of a rate case. But I should shut up and let them answer if you'd like to ask them directly.
We could certainly query them. Mr. Espindola, you're on the line for questions, as is Steve DeVries, and then Rich Gazaway is also with you. So why don't we start with Mr. Espindola as the chair. Do you have any thoughts on this particular potential scenario?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I'm actually going to turn this question over to my colleague, Commissioner DeVries. He will cite statute and regulation that we have in place that helps in this scenario with affiliated transactions.
For the record, through the chair, my name is Steve DeVries. I'm a commissioner with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Did the question that came, did that come from Senator Myers?
Yes, Senator Myers.
Okay, well, to answer Senator Myers' question about affiliated transactions, there's two provisions in the Public Utilities Regulatory Act that govern review of affiliated transactions. Those are AS 4205.441, subsection C, and then also 4205, I believe it's 511. Both govern, and that would be 511C also, both govern how we handle affiliated transactions. Essentially, we closely scrutinize affiliated transactions to make sure that they are, that there's really no markup, that they're realistically cost-based, and that there isn't any unfair dealing, so to speak, and how those costs are ultimately passed through to ratepayers. They have a heightened scrutiny, unlike a third-party transaction. Now, to the extent that scenario A is concerned about how that could be adversely implicated, I would assume it would be to the same extent that our overall capabilities to review the rates charged out of for a gas sales agreement or a terminal use agreement would be impacted as well, given the interplay between FERC jurisdiction and RCA jurisdiction. So to the extent there's harm that, or a potential for harm that lives by virtue of the continued existence of 4205.711V, that would apply to all of our review authority for gas sales agreements, including the scenario A that Mr. Cole has pointed out in his very thoughtful and thorough presentation that he put together. And I'd like to compliment him on that. The reason that we have said, I believe, in our bill review for the reason that we think that there is a cloud or potential cloud that's created by the existence of this particular provision exists in essence because while we have already concluded what the extent of our jurisdiction is vis-a-vis FERC's jurisdiction, its exclusive jurisdiction over the siting, construction, expansion, and operation of an LNG import facility, and our ability to review rates imposed on or to be passed through to ratepayers, is that we are ultimately not the final arbiter of what our jurisdiction is. We have stated, and I'm not going to get into the details of our order because it's still in a theoretically it's subject to appeal for 30 days, but at a higher level, we can issue a decision about what we think our jurisdiction is, but the courts will be the ultimate arbiters of what that is and what that is not. And to the extent that there's a challenge that's going to be raised about our authority, I would assume a linchpin, if not the a significant linchpin in that argument, would be the continued existence of the exemption that is currently that you're currently looking at repealing. So that's why we think that the passage of this particular bill would help remove that uncertainty. I hope I've answered your question.
For now, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. DeVries. Senator Meyer said yes for now. Further questions? Yes, Senator Clayman.
Has the RCA formally endorsed this measure?
This is Chair. This is Steve DeVries with the Regulatory Commission. To answer Senator Clayman's question, no, we have not.
Okay. Further questions? All right. Very good. Well, Dr. Colt, I will let you. You've presented scenario A. We've gotten some excellent response from the RCA. And now we can go to slide 8, which is your scenario B.
Yes. And there's so many moving parts here, for me anyway, not doing this hour to hour like my esteemed compatriots at the commission. I'm having to reread scenario B. Scenario B tries to look at sort of the other side of the coin, if you will, and that is, well, whoever got this exemption into play here, somebody must have wanted it, right? And so we sort of tried to ask ourselves, well, if you repeal it, are there some downside risks to doing that? And the way I came up with a potential downside risk was to say, sort of try to make almost a caricature of what might happen. But the idea is, if you repeal it, is there some danger that the RCA will run wild? To put it in sort of crude terms. And I found it instructive. I guess I get to quote from the order, even though the RCA itself doesn't. I hope I'm allowed to, but I have been. In the order, the RCA placed great weight, I thought, on the guidance that it received both from the existing statute, which was passed as part of HB 50, but also to the legislative history of HB 50, and they cited the legislative guidance as a reason why RCA would not be able to run wild or assert too much jurisdiction. And it's a little bit complicated, but they were sort of declining to take up an offer that one of the parties put forward in their brief in the order, that party being RAPA, the consumer, the public advocate division. So RAPA said, hey, you probably could regulate these facilities under this Hinshaw Amendment to the Natural Gas Act. The RCA in the order said, thanks, but no thanks. We place great weight in what the legislature said, and the legislature said, Not only did they pass 711V, but they also did this very important thing in the legislative history, which I'm going to go to, I'm going to show you in slide 9. And therefore, saith the RCA in the order, we decline to really try to push the limits of our jurisdiction. And so to try to get to the nub of scenario B, with all that lead up, the question in scenario B is, well, if you repeal the exemption, you'll be changing what I think in one of their quotes the commission called the sideboards. And so if you change the sideboards, is there some danger that the commission might then be able to overreach in the regulatory direction? I definitely will pause for questions now, but I will just say that the next slide is sort of an integral part of this scenario.
Well, why don't we go on to the next slide, which is 9.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next slide just reiterates something that the commission found instructive, and I did too. And that you may, Madam Chair, for all I know, you may have introduced this language, because this language came into House Bill 50 via a Senate Resources Committee substitute almost exactly a year ago today. So the House bill did not have anything to say about directly about the Commission's ability to treat import facilities in a certain way for rate making purposes. But lo and behold, Senate Resources, and again, it may have been yourself, Madam Chair, put in this very interesting language, which really seeks or clarifies that the Commission is going to definitely have a lot to say about how the facility translates into rates. However, Senate Finance then took this language out, and in the fine print on my slide, you can read how Senator Bishop was not too excited about that, although he didn't object. And it's the taking out that the commission is relying on as part of its sideboards, if you will. So to try to summarize what the question is in scenario B, to try to summarize it, the question is knowing that the commission is already cognizant of the fact that this language here got taken out, if you also take out the exemption, does that leave the commission potentially able to sort of go too far in the regulatory direction? And in particular, I guess, I think I've stated the question well enough, and the slide 10 actually just reiterates it all. So I think that was a very convoluted way of trying to put on the table the question in scenario B, but there it is. I'll pause.
So looking at slide 9 and subsection P, I don't distinctly remember, that was several bills ago and several amendments ago, but I certainly see what we were looking at, because the protection of the public is the key piece here, the rate making by the commission. And, of course, our trust in our regulatory commission. I do appreciate the comment that you captured from Senator Bishop, who cautioned us to pay attention to this subject going forward. But it looks, I'm not quite sure. Does slide 10 clarify what your conclusion was, Dr. Colt?
Well, maybe, but it's not a conclusion.
Okay.
It's only a conclusion in the form of trying to get to a question that actually rises to the level of your policymaking duty. So let's look at slide 10, see if I can help myself out here. I think slide 10 has this idea of the jurisdictional sideboards here, straight from the order, where, again, the RCA is failing to avail itself of what you might call an opportunity presented by RAPA to assert stronger rather than weaker oversight over this whole process of development, permitting, construction, siting, and ultimately use of an LNG import facility. And they're declining to be aggressive, in my view, as I read the order, precisely because they say we don't want to disregard the jurisdictional sideboards imposed on us by not only the exemption that's in law, but the fact of the amendment, which took out a little bit of their clout, if you will, that was taken out. So that's another piece of the sideboards that the RCA is seeing imposed by you, the legislature. And the idea with the question in scenario B is, well, if you take out the exemption, might it open up not now or with this docket by any means, but in some future world with a different commission and a different set of circumstances, might it open up a facility to some sort of unreasonable overreach by the RCA? And I'm not purporting to answer that question, but I'm trying to use this scenario to tee it up for your consideration.
Very good. Thank you. I'm going to ask Commissioner DeVries if he has any comments at this point. Commissioner?
Through the chair, this is Steve DeVries with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. To address this question, perhaps I think it might be helpful to at least move up to about the 1,000-foot level and look at the jurisdictional framework. The FERC has exclusive authority, exclusive jurisdiction under federal law when it comes to siting, operations, permitting, construction, expansion, et cetera, for LNG facilities. There is an exception in the law, which is discussed in this slide, called the Henshaw Amendment. The Henshaw Amendment, as I understand it, applies to interstate commerce. It does not apply, as I understand it, to foreign commerce. What we have here in Alaska when we are looking at imported LNG is foreign commerce. So the flexibility, to the extent that it exists for FERC to delegate or permit a state commission to exercise jurisdictional oversight over the siting, construction, operation, et cetera, of an LNG facility would not apply up here. That's my understanding of the law. I'll just stop there and see if the committee has any questions.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. DeVries, so it's my understanding usually the federal government regulates foreign commerce in addition to interstate. And so I'm curious as to why FERC wouldn't apply in this case if let's say we build an import facility and we import gas out of Canada, just as one example. I mean, wouldn't they regulate – let's say we went the other direction. We built a pipeline from Alaska into Canada. Wouldn't FERC regulate that?
Senator Myers, through the chair, Steve DeVries from the Regulatory Commission, yeah, it would. FERC would regulate that. But what we have here is a situation where FERC would regulate foreign commerce as well. That would be foreign commerce. What FERC regulates under these circumstances is the LNG facility itself. And we do not assert that we have authority or jurisdiction to exercise that or to insert ourselves into FERC's regulatory jurisdiction. We have no capability to do so under the law or under the Constitution. The Supremacy Clause would bar the state at the Alaska's commission from exercising any regulatory commission over a FERC jurisdictional property, notwithstanding any state law that said that we would have the jurisdiction to do so. I'll stop there and see if I've answered your question.
Senator Myers?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right. All right, very good. Thank you, Commissioner DeVries. Dr. Colt, moving on to slide 11.
Yes. However, I can't resist attempting to make a friendly clarification to Commissioner DeVries' answer to this question. The scenario where the Hinshaw Amendment might come into play would be if Alaska were to be receiving LNG from Oregon. Then it would not be foreign commerce, it would be interstate commerce, and that is the situation to which this Hinshaw exception applies. And I think I should pause and make sure that I haven't misstated it.
I'm going to ask Commissioner DeVries whether that was a misstatement, since he's the expert. Commissioner?
Through the chair, this is Steve DeVries, Regulatory Commission. I'm just making sure I understood Mr. Or Professor Colt's question. If I understand his question correctly, it was, what if gas was to come to Alaska from Oregon rather than from a foreign source? And if so, would the scenario be a potential issue? I guess my answer to that question would start from a practical perspective. That is that the Jones Act would require gas to come on a U.S. flag tanker, LNG tanker, and there are none. So I don't know how that scenario could come into play, at least for quite some time, unless there's potentially U.S. flag tankers being built in the States right now. I'm not aware of any. Perhaps that would be a good idea, but I'm not aware of any. In any case, so I don't know if that hypothetical is a plausible hypothetical to work with. However, if it was to come into existence, then I believe in theory the Hinshaw Amendment could theoretically provide the FERC, the jurisdictional authority under interstate commerce, to allow the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to exercise authority, in which case then we would be more concerned about the continued existence of the exemption 4205.711b, because that would potentially fuel an argument that the commission lacks the authority to do so.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right, moving on to slide 11.
Slide 11 is the last, and it really doesn't have very much definitive to say other than to reiterate that we think or we just felt it's useful to keep front and center that this would be a perhaps not as broad an exemption as might be implied when I wrote this bullet, but the exemption as it's stated is from a very broad statute of, it, I should have put chapter. The exemption is from the entirety of Chapter 5. I think that's worth keeping in mind. And if it was, if the bill is passed, if it, if the exemption is removed, it could help clarify that RCA has jurisdiction over prices and rates. And it could, I'm actually going to skip my third bullet because I think we've addressed it with the help of people who know more than me. But the last bullet that I thought was maybe worthy of summarization is that there is this potential. It's been described, I think, correctly as remote, that there might come up a situation where the RCA could find itself somewhat hampered by the exemption if FERC was, for some reason, not able to be fully in control or of the facilities regulation. So I'm going to leave it at that with one last quote I can't resist. This comes to us from Chugach Electric's very articulate brief in this matter, where they in turn quote the DC Circuit saying, quote, LNG import authorizations implicate a tangled web of regulatory processes, end quote. End of presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Colt. Dr. Colt, on your fourth bullet, it says remove sideboards that RCA currently defers to. Are you saying subsection V does this, or repealing subsection V would remove sideboards?
Through the chair to Madam Chair, if we could go back one slide to number 10, I think it's better to simply for me to simply read what the commission wrote in its order so I don't misrepresent it. Which is, if we were to do in this case what RAPA is suggesting that we do, namely, if we were to try to be more aggressive in our regulation of this facility, we would be disregarding the jurisdictional sideboards imposed on us by the legislature. And so the way I read it, there's two sideboards. One is the legislative history, where the Senate Finance Committee said, no way are we going to allow this subsection P language, which gives the RCA an affirmative ability to regard LNG import facilities potentially as utility property, which is makes a very direct connection from the facility to the rates. That's one sideboard, and it's all these double negatives. But the fact that they removed that amendment puts a sideboard on the RCA, okay? And then the other sideboard is the continuing existence of 711V. In other words, it's sort of a hands-off the facilities exemption. So those are what I interpret to be the two sideboards which the RCA is deferring to.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. Senator Myers.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Dr. Colt, I'd like to suggest a scenario C for you, and I'm curious to see if it's any different from scenario B. So we've been talking a lot about NSTAR and its proposed plan to build a facility. The other proposal that's currently out there would be Harvest buying the current Marathon plant and converting that to an import facility. And then NSTAR wouldn't be involved at all in that deal except as a customer, presumably. Is there any significant difference there between scenarios A and B and then scenario C when we're talking about something that doesn't already involve a regulated natural gas utility?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, well, that's a great scenario to put into the hopper, and we were intending to put them on your plate as opposed to your putting them on our plate. But to my lightning reaction, and there, I think it might be good to ask the others on the line here. My lightning reaction is that one seems not terribly problematic because NSTAR would be purchasing from whoever builds the facility. I guess you said harvest. And so to me, that takes us back to the analogy that RCA, I think, very wisely cited when they said, look, buying gas from an import terminal is analogous to buying gas from a gas well. And so I see this scenario that you've teed up as kind of like that. That's just my very lightning reaction, and really I'm way less qualified to answer that than some of the other people on the line here.
And so with that, I am going to ask Commissioner DeVries if he could opine, understanding that we are asking these questions quite spontaneously. And so, Commissioner DeVries, do you have any thoughts on that last scenario that Senator Myers proposed?
Thank you, through the chair, or to the chair. This is Steve DeVries for the Regulatory Commission. The jurisdictional landscape, as I see it, is no different. FERC jurisdiction is exclusive over the currently existing LNG imports, or the former export facility that's being looked at as being converted into an import facility, as well as the proposed Glen Farm facility. The jurisdictional boundaries are the same. FERC has exclusive jurisdiction over the siting, construction, operation, et cetera, of those facilities, both of them. Our authority is no different. We would have the authority to review gas sales agreements or terminal use agreements from that are presented to us by utilities using those facilities for purposes of reserving capacity or obtaining gas supplies from either facility. That's the jurisdictional analysis I don't see changing by virtue of moving from one facility to the other. I hope I've answered your question. If not, I'll be happy to follow up.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Senator Kawasaki.
Sure. I've got a question, and I don't know who would be the best person to answer this. It's sort of a legal question. And in 711V, the place where it looks like we had exempted something in a prior piece of legislation in a prior year, it went through this committee, and I don't remember exactly what happened, right? I think this was happening during the end of a legislative session. Everything was moving fast. I don't exactly remember this. One, I didn't remember looking up the citation to understand what this V would actually do. What happens if the legislature now fails to repeal 711V this year or next year? Is that enough ammunition for somebody to say that we don't want that RCA to be regulating the LNG facility?
Well, that is the question. First of all, I guess I would reiterate what Commissioner DeVries just said, that they're not RCA is not regulating the facility itself anyway, right? But it's created this confusion, right, that they have no jurisdiction over the sales either. So I guess I would go to Commissioner DeVries again to ask his opinion, which, again, he may or may not wish to offer.
Sure.
Commissioner DeVries.
This is Steve DeVries through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. To answer your question, if the exemption is not repealed, it is our current opinion that we still retain the jurisdiction to review these gas sale agreements and terminal use agreements, whether they come from a harvest facility or a to-be-built Glen Farm facility. What the problem is that the existence of this particular provision, and as I pointed out before, we're not the ultimate arbiter of what the jurisdiction of the federal government of FERC, nor or even our own jurisdiction. We're not the ultimate arbiter of our own jurisdiction. That decision is up to the courts. And the continued existence of this exemption provides ammunition or an argument that could be made. I am not speculating or suggesting about the strength of that argument, but it could be made, and that this particular exemption would provide a linchpin in that argument. By repealing it, you eliminate that arm of an argument that could be made to a court that we lack the jurisdiction to review these gas sale agreements or terminal use agreements. I hope I've answered your question.
You have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. And you know what Commissioner DeVries just said is actually my total reason for offering this piece of legislation. Not only do you see that confusion in Order Number 5, April, just last month, but on January 15th, 2025, when NSTAR was presenting to the RCA their plan to import gas, this question came up also. So really that encapsulates the whole reason for this clarification. You know, I think something to discuss and work with the RCA on over the interim is subsection P, which was part of the Senate Resources Committee bill, but was removed by the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee is always a problem. But regardless, but that's a future discussion, right? And something to discuss over interim. But I thought today would be a good time to just kind of clarify, get some expert discussion on this subject. Dr. Colt, any closing remarks?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to learn a lot here, and I especially appreciate the willingness of the RCA commissioners and staff to participate in this discussion. I think it's, if nothing else, it's fascinating. And finally, I have to say, as a ratepayer and a consumer, I really appreciate the committee's ongoing attempts to put consumer protection front and center as we transition into some kind of a new era with respect to gas.
Yes. Thank you very much, Dr. Colt. Senator Myers, you had a question.
Yes, actually, I believe for Mr. DeVries.
Yes, Commissioner DeVries is still with us.
Yeah, so Commissioner DeVries, my question, we've been talking about South Central Gas. I'm just a little curious about gas that we're talking about for Fairbanks. So the plan, it's been delayed again a little bit from what I understand, is so Harvest has been building an LNG facility up on the slope. And then that gas will then get trucked down to Fairbanks and put into the Interior Gas Utility System, which is owned by the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Is the RCA involved in any regulation in any portion of that system?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, it's my understanding that utility that's obtaining that gas for Fairbanks is not economically regulated.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right, with that, I want to thank Dr. Colt. I know Dr. Holdman has been attending also. Thank you to Commissioner Espindola and Commissioner DeVries for being online. We value your input very much. Also to Rich Gazaway, who is the attorney or administrative law judge for the RCA. I want the record also to reflect that Senator Hughes has been online for more than half of the meeting. And welcome to Representative Mears and Representative Holland, who also joined us today. With that, that concludes our agenda for today. The next meeting will be Monday, May 12th at 3:30 p.m. We have two items on the agenda: Senate Bill 174, Invasive Species Management, and Senate Joint Resolution 20, Cleanup of Marine Debris. With that, the committee stands adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:32 p.m.